For 6 months, things went on. We sequestered ourselves in a handful of rooms, the kitchen, where John still slept at night, the drawing room, and the library. We girls used the back stairs to get from the kitchen to the one bedroom that seemed secure. The mattresses we slept on were those we had dragged from the old room, the beds themselves being too heavy to move. The house had felt too big anyway since the household had been so diminished in number. We survivors felt more at ease in the security, the manageability of our smaller accommodation. All the same, we could never quite forget the rest of the house, slowly festering behind closed doors like a moribund limb. Before we closed up the rooms, Emmeline had gone through cupboards belonging to Isabel and taken dresses and scent bottles and shoes, which she hoarded in our campsite of a bedroom. It was like trying to sleep in a dressing-up box. The dresses made her look older than 15. They made her look womanly. I remembered Hester's conversation with the doctor in the garden. There is no reason why Emmeline should not marry one day. And I felt a sudden anxiety. But then she flopped down on a kitchen chair, took a pack of cards from a silk purse, and said, all child, "Play cards with me, go on." I was half reassured, but still I made sure she did not leave the house in her finery. John was listless. He did rouse himself to do the unthinkable, though. He got a boy to help in the garden.
"It'll be all right," he said. "It's only old Proctor's boy, Ambrose. He's a quiet lad. It won't be for long, only till I get the house fixed up."
That, I knew, would take forever. The boy came. He was taller than John and broader across the shoulders. They stood, hands in pockets, the two of them, and discussed the day's work, and then the boy started. He had a measured, patient way of digging. The smooth, constant chime of spade on soil got on my nerves. "Why do we have to have him?" I wanted to know. "He's an outsider, just like the others." But for some reason, the boy wasn't an outsider to John, perhaps because he came from John's world, the world of men, the world I didn't know. "He's a good lad," John said time and time again in answer to my questions. "He's a hard worker. He doesn't ask too many questions, and he doesn't talk too much."
"He might not have a tongue, but he's got eyes in his head."
John shrugged and looked away, uneasy.
"I won't always be here," he said eventually. "Things can't go on forever like this."
He sketched a vague gesture that took in the house, its inhabitants, the life we led in it.
"One day, things will have to change."
"Change?"
"You're growing up. It won't be the same, will it? It's one thing being children, but when you're grown up..."
But I was already gone. I didn't want to know what it was he had to say. Emmeline was in the bedroom picking sequins off an evening scarf for her treasure box. I sat down beside her. Her calm face never changed as she bent over the scarf. Lips together. Her gaze at once intent and dreamy. Every so often her eyelids descended, closing off the green irises, then, as soon as they had touched the lower lid, rising again to reveal the green unchanged. Did I really look like that? I wondered. Oh, I knew what a good match we were in the mirror, but still I didn't look like Emmeline, did I? My face could not do that placid concentration. It would be screwed up in frustration. I would bite the sequins off with my teeth. "You won't leave me, will you?" I wanted to say. "Because I won't leave you. We'll stay here forever. Together. Whatever John the Dig says."